Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
We should maybe get to the point on what the hell Police Knots is.
Mankind creates its first space station. They decide to put five policemen up there. One of them is in an accident, never to be found again until his cryo ball, which was with him, is miraculously discovered.
It's all about how a guy from 2010 is struggling to adapt to the year 2040. So he remembers the good old days when everybody smoked cigarettes, like regular old cigarettes, and just puff, puff, puff. These jerk-offs are out here smoking non-combustible cigarettes like wieners.
That's a Kojima character detail right there.
Yeah.
If only he swallowed a carton of cigarettes in 2010 and then regurgitated it in 2045. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source, the brain train, your knowledge, you'll lay maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes, the host of proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others, discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Oh, I have a bad feeling about this.
Hey, everybody. We're going to be talking about Myst. And this game was nominated by At Blues Dance. It was developed by Cyan and published by Bruderbund. Did I say that correctly? I hope I did. There was a whole Retronauts episode about Bruderbund, and they explained how you're supposed to pronounce it. And now I can't remember how I'm supposed to pronounce it, but I know it's not Broderbund, which is how I always pronounced as a kid. Anyway, release date and territory. Well, it says PC on the spreadsheet, but I know it was released for the Mac first. September 24th, 1993 in the United States. Who here is with me to talk about this game, and when did you first play it?
I'm Carl, and you are right that it was released on the Mac first, because it's a HyperCard game. And I think I first played Myst in, I want to say, 1996. I couldn't be 100% sure on that. But it would have been, like, around 95, 96. I don't think I had a PlayStation.
Was it your first CD-ROM game?
I do want to say yes. I think it might have been. I was the perfect, absolutely perfect, like, experience of Myst. Is just like, here's a CD drive. Now you have this Myst, and that was, it was very, very remarkable. It was definitely like a holy crap. This is something that you can do.
Who else is here?
I'm Tex Albert. I think I played this game around the same time as Cal, and I do remember it as this game that was so, like, the graphics were so intense that it needed these mystical silver discs.
Yeah.
To be summoned to your computer.
It was your first, like, PC CD-ROM game.
It was definitely one of the first. I might have played other ones first, but I think most of the games I played first were maybe games that also had a floppy release, and then you had this second CD release with the soundtrack in a better quality. This one here was a very explicit CD-only, no floppy release game, because this would have had to come on, like, 147 floppies.
Yeah, it would have been nuts
if they'd done that.
Yeah.
Change a disc every single screen, just in out.
It's a bit awkward to talk about this one because one of our most infamous episodes is where we talked about Riven, the sequel to Myst, and I was not a big fan of that game. However, surprise, surprise, with the original Myst, which is a much smaller, more focused game, but not all that different gameplay-wise. I wouldn't say like I'm a big fan, like I still play it to this day, but I'll admit, like, I bought Real Myst, and I was excited to revisit it, and I like this game. I liked it when it was new, and
it almost sounded like that was hard to get out. Like, I'm gonna say I like it. Here we go.
I gotta say, like, I'm trying to think of like something funny to say where I'm gonna like just dump all over it again, but I can't because it really was like I spent hours playing this game. And had a lot of fun doing it, even when I didn't know what I was doing, because
I think it's very important because you probably won't know what you're doing for some time.
And I just felt like I could get far enough to feel like I was making progress, even if I wasn't.
I'll definitely cover that a little bit. It wasn't
like
Riven where
it just felt like I was just like, I've got four other discs I haven't even seen yet. You know what I mean?
It is fair to say this. Even though superficially Riven looks quite similar to Myst, the prequel to Riven, it is quite different because it is structured differently. And in some ways, it's less ambitious, but that's probably for its own good. Because Riven is huge. Riven is probably a little bigger than it's good for the game. Whereas Myst is a little bit more structured, and you're less likely to get lost. You can still get lost, but it's a bit more compartmentalized. So yeah, when you make progress, you actually know it.
Small, right?
I mean, the important thing about Myst, and I wouldn't mind introducing a little bit about Myst, just in case someone has decided not to play Myst, which
you
seems
play
unlikely.
It, I don't know, and you go somewhere for some reason, and you do stuff that kind
of
that does
like,
things
like multiple hundreds of millions of copies. This game sold more copies in 1998, I believe it is, than Riven did. It was either 98 or 99 when Myst outsold Riven, the sequel to Myst.
I think Myst remained the top-selling video game for years.
Before we continue, we got one other person who is here to talk. I don't want to leave him out.
No.
Who else is here? I'm Satringa.
Mr. Satenga.
He's not.
I saw the hop in. Maybe the mic is not connected. That's okay.
He's currently still falling through the void. He just opened his world link.
My body not working. There we go. It's okay. Well, I'll continue to talk about the
Myst
setup.
You don't need
setup.
To say the embarrassing stuff. You could just be like, I'm Satenga. Myst is very important to me.
Is that well? It could be true, but the cool thing about Myst, right, is it opens with a fly. Like it just—it's very everything about this game kind of sets up this majesty of Myst. Like you boot up the game, and then you just get this weird intro of like a guy falling through a void, and it's technically Arthas or something, which makes literally no sense if you know the plot, but that doesn't matter. The main thing is there's just a book with like this moving image, and you're like, cool.
Do they ever explain like why he does that happens to you?
So there's a prequel novel.
No, I don't know. Does the game explain that?
No.
So they do mention that there are these books that link different worlds. They don't quite explain why the character that gets his hands on the book in the game, I think.
Because the character isn't supposed to ostensibly be the player, like, themselves. Like, that's kind of... It never identifies them as anyone other than, like, some random, like... That's,
yeah, you're just you, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's...
Falling
guy number one. But, you know, it's like... Then you're in the world of Myst, and it's, like, at first you think it's like, oh, it's a little, like, textbook... like, a postage stamp kind of video, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. But then you click it, and this is like the subtle genius of Myst. Then it immediately blows out as full screen video, like full rendered, fly over Myst Island, and doesn't really impress the way it used to. But when you were just sitting there on your computer, and you're like, oh yeah, mini screen video. Yeah, I've seen that before. I've seen small video. And then it's like, no, actually, it's full screen. You're like, whoa, holy hell, here we go, wow. And even
get
the sound design.
Click on some stuff.
this was fairly impressive back in the day, and even though the mid-90s were kind of the full motion video age before people realized that you could fill CDs with better things than poorly compressed video files. This was in 1993, so you did have FMV back then, but it wasn't quite as ubiquitous, and it hadn't been quite as badly abused as it would be later.
But yeah, so what the most important, like, kind of setup dealio thing is, you just basically are immediately let loose on Mist Island. And this is really important because Mist Island is the most open and free form, I think, of the parts of Mist. It's relatively small, but it feels like a pretty substantial space to take in. Like, you know, you can move around, you can explore in front of you, and you can explore, like, a little library, you can explore a little forest. Like, it's just kind of like a sample of areas, and...
Yeah, there's more, like... It's got a rocket ship. There's a piano inside the rocket ship.
Oh, yeah, the UFO piano. That's, I think I got stuck there for about 4 hours.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the average player spent 95% of their time on that first island. So,
it's good that they, like, kind of, like, landed the first island is pretty solid.
I mean, it's a very, like... go back to this, bring this back. It's a very vaporwave aesthetic now, I guess you would say. Like, it is definitely, it was all done, I believe, the rendering was done in a program called Bryce.
Yeah, that sounds
which
right.
Bryce, I would love to be able to emulate something that could do that program again, because I could just make, like, vaporwave masterpieces on that. That's what it is. It's like, it's that's what it did, is it made... render, like, it would take, like, all night to render something this, like, this on, like, a single screen on your, like, Quadra or whatever you were using back in the day, and that's what you got. But that's how they did it, and, you know, it's I mean, what really sells it is not just the graphics, like the rendered, you know, images, it's the, like, atmospheric sound effects and stuff like that. People kind of forget that part of it, but that was there.
What shocked me, because obviously I went back to Mist for this, I wasn't gonna, no way was I going to rely on whatever my memory is. You know, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. I went back, and what really did shock me was how phenomenal the sound design is in this game. Like, obviously, the, you know, it's 3D rendered environments and that kind of thing, which was obviously the easier thing to be astounded by. But the audio is really, I would say, almost more important. I remember seeing a documentary of the Millers and, like, a production of Mist, and, you know, they were, like, running around, like, the countryside, wherever they were, like, filming dripping taps and that kind of thing. Like, this is how we got our sound effects and that kind of deal. But it's really, really solid. Like, each individual, like chunk, like, you know, like, just screen in the game, like, where you move, that will often have unique audio for that space, you know? So,
right,
you know, yeah. Not just, like, running water, the sound of the wind, like, cogs, mechanics moving, or, like, just, like, environmental, like, musical cues, like, actual, like, full music. So it does that whole, Sergio Leone, that's the director, Enrico Morcione,
Morcone.
Thank you. I suck at pronunciations. You all know that. You know, like, where it mixes environmental sounds, like, you know, wind and rocks falling and that kind of thing, with an audio musical instrumental soundtrack. And so it comes together to really paint this great visual and audio thing, which you couldn't do before you had access right. to a CD like that.
Right. And what's amazing, it's just the two dudes, right? Like, who did the
I believe some
game.
Other people were involved in the development of Mist. I don't know to the extent of
I know they had help. Like, I know Cyan, yeah. like, expanded to do, like, Riven. They had to have had more people. But to do this one, like the helpers would have just been, like, the people who did the video stuff, right? Like, who, yeah. like, were, like, because they themselves portrayed some of the characters.
I mean, all the characters, movies. Them, essentially. You've got one of them, is it Rand Miller? It does both.
I don't care. Yeah, just whatever.
Arthas and the crazy brother, and then the other Miller does the, the more reasonable, but clearly kind of stuff going on. It is funny that in the game, they're also brothers, which is pretty funny.
Yeah,
it might as well be.
Shall we actually talk about the story for a bit? Which isn't maybe
as quickly as possible, because nobody. Okay.
So the basic story is, as we've already mentioned, you land on Mist Island after touching the linking book. You find two more books in which these two brothers, Arcana the crazy one and Cyrus the more well-spoken one, are trapped, and they urge you to liberate them from those books. but there's something fishy about them. And the idea is that those are prison books, and you essentially want to find Artrus instead. So he's their father, and he imprisoned them for good reason. And but he has been imprisoned himself. Oh, he's been trapped himself. So and you are essentially dragged into this conflict from the outside to solve the crisis. And there are multiple endings, so you can make your choice in the end, leading to a good ending or one of several bad endings.
Yeah, if you don't figure out what's going on almost immediately upon meeting the other characters, like, you're a dummy. You're a big dummy.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that the brothers are up to no good. And the story isn't really the main focus. It's there at the beginning, it's there at the end, but for the most part, you are by yourself. And I think it actually works quite well. The game doesn't have many NPCs. And I think that adds a little bit because...
I don't think it has any.
Well, it has, I guess the brothers could count as NPCs, well, but there's nobody running around in the world.
Strictly speaking, you don't talk to anyone in the game, which even separates it from stuff like Spaceship Starship Warlock, like
they talk to you.
Yeah. Whereas in this one, you don't have anything to interact with than the world. That's what I like about it, because you never feel any sort of like pressure in this game. It's a very relaxing experience for the most part, because it's just like, Explore the world of Myst and explore the ages of the books and just at your own pace. And I think that's one of the things that sold people on this game so well, is simply that they just loaded up the game and then you just feel immersed in Myst. And that was more important when this was literally the most impressive visual audio experience a game had ever delivered. Also, because this didn't try and do real-time 3D. Because, you could kind of get some real-time 3D at this point, but... this game felt like a real space.
It would have looked horrific.
Absolutely.
It would have been dreadful. I mean, the thing about the game is it did something that it's like it. Thinking about this as an adventure game is one way to look at it, but I think that's the wrong way to look at it, because in terms of gameplay stuff, like, it's a pretty crappy adventure game in my opinion, because I don't feel like the puzzles bear any logical relationship to the things they do. You just kind of fumble your way around and you find clues, and it's like, oh, this clue is telling me I press these piano keys in this order. That's what I do. I mean, that's not really much of a puzzle. What that is just trying to like connect the dots between like the different things.
What I can explain, because I've actually been thinking a lot about the structure of Myst and why I think it, why it resonated quite well with people. This would actually take several minutes to explain.
I was going to talk about like what I thought was brilliant about
it. Yeah, so you do that, and I'll make sure if it's different to what I'm thinking.
Right, so the context of the game, I think, is the best way to appreciate it, and the best way to understand what was so great about it, is that it's really a killer app that's selling a platform. And the platform it's selling is the external CD-ROM drive that you would buy and hook up to your existing computer.
Used one of those, by the way, to play this proper external drive. And I don't know if anyone that's listening to this, you either know exactly what I'm talking about, or you'll be like, what? That's a real thing. It was an external CD drive where you had an extra like CD housing that you opened up the case.
Oh, you put it into the case.
You put the
it's
disc.
Like a PSP cartridge, a PSP disc, right?
Like you open up the case and then you put the CD in the case, close the case, and then insert the case into the CD drive, and then it works like a giant floppy disk.
I bet if I went back to like my mom and dad's house, I could probably find the CD-ROM drive that I played this on.
It was a
Mac, compatible NEC 2X CD-ROM drive, and it was huge. It was like the size of like, it was bigger than a Wii, I think. It was pretty big.
Also, four times as heavy as a Wii.
I mean, I'm looking at my Switch on the floor at the moment, and my CD drive was just a little bit smaller than the Switch in the dock. Like, just a tiny bit.
Yeah, it was huge. And it plugged into the Mac with a SCSI cable, which is like, it looks like not something, it looks like the kind of input-output interface that you would have for like a missile launcher or something. It does, a SCSI cable doesn't look like it belongs like a consumer electronic thing. It looked like something like you had to screw it into the back like a VGA.
Right, yeah, you got
it. Monitor. Yeah, it was like it was just bonkers.
It's also worth noting that those aren't 16 times speed drives. Those were one time.
I think mine was like speed two times. Ooh, I think was my speed.
Yeah, mine was a 2x, I believe.
But even then, if you put in a CD, you could hear that drive was working hard.
Oh yeah,
read that CD.
Oh yeah,
and it made clunky noises too because obviously it had to open the thing up.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like an inkjet printer is what they sounded like.
It's one of those things that, like, I don't think this is like directly missed, but I do feel like the amount of effort you had to go through. Did add to the, at the time, the experience of, like, just, like, the psychological experience of, like, you have to do this stuff, and then this thing erupts out of the computer, and, interacting with physical things does get you kind of, like, puts you in a mindset compared to just...
It was a bit of a ritual at the
time. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is roughly the same time as, like, Doom, right? Like,
it's kind of like two sides of games.
It felt like, I mean, there were other, like, you know, full motion video games like Seventh Guest and stuff. I mean,
Seventh Guest is garbage. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, it is garbage. And you knew it was garbage when you were playing. You're like, oh, this is garbage. It's not a killer app, right? You know, but this is a killer. Myst is a killer app for those external CD-ROM drives. And it worked because it showed you something you couldn't do on anything else, but it wasn't hard to figure out. It wasn't hard to, like, understand.
I mean, the
important
thing about Myst was that it also, it didn't require a powerful computer, pointed out by lots
because
of people.
Because it's essentially a slideshow.
Yeah, it is. It's a HyperCard stack. Yeah, literally, that's what it is.
And it works because, but it does give you the illusion of it being, like, a very proper kind of world and experience. Like, that's a very key aspect to the game, like, because lots and bits and pieces of the game, it's not just static screens. You've got... I think, sometimes the water in the screen is animated, so it just flows
like
a little bit.
Yeah, it's like an animated GIF, basically. I mean, it's probably
it
almost
sells
exactly
you
what it is.
On the world better. And also, like, there's quite a few just arbitrary objects that, they do stupid things that it literally, like, it's like, what, is that impressive?
Yeah, I think
like,
that's
no, it's
the
not impressive,
that
but it does it.
Skull.
Yes, that's everyone's favorite device is is it the crazy? No, so I think it's the more better spoken one, brother, who has this like little device that has the. I like that you can see all these like early Mac video editing like elements in there because clearly like they've obviously used the Mac tools. So it's like you got the morph tool, so it goes from a skull like from a rose to a skull, and it's just like a slider. And at the time, it would have been like, wow, that's really cool. And now it's like, yeah, I know how you did that. It's really easy, but. Definitely, it adds a lot to just feeling like the world is a real space, which is really the mastery of Myst is just convincing people that it was a real space rather than pictures and sound or like, and it transcends like, because at this point in time, it's you gotta like be valid. You're either used to games that are literally full motion video or pixels and sprites. Like those are your two genres. Yeah.
And this game, like all good killer apps, was good for your mom and dad. They would try it out, It's the kind of thing that like people didn't feel intimidated by it. They just wanted their curiosity overcame their like trepidation at like trying something that they didn't understand. And that's what I think made it so popular is because it was so compelling to look at that anybody who had the chance would just, I'm just going to sit down and try this out. Like, what do I do? And the game never punished you. It wasn't like, oh, you're dead now, sucker. Like,
yeah, the only way to really fail is like the game is like, this is a really bad idea. And you're like, I don't care. Like, yeah.
I didn't even think that was really hard to even get to that point, though.
Yeah. If you, I mean, you can essentially die or be trapped, but that's near the end of the game. So you'd already have to figure out most of that. But generally, there's no real enemies as antagonists, but no real like video
enemies.
Also,
very importantly, there is no dead ends.
No time limit, no dead ends. Yeah, so you can walk around for as long as you want, and you'll never miss an item. You won't run out of time. You won't miss an NPC, and there's no monster that's going to kill you.
Right.
So if you want to sit in Myst and just explore, you can do that, and nobody's going to prevent you from doing that, which I think is.
And you don't feel like you wasted your time because you felt like you at the time. Now nowadays you would feel like you wasted your time. You're like, I just looked at like a bunch of like pre-rendered you know, like vaporwave album covers, you know, for YouTube or something. But at the time you didn't feel that way. What you felt like is that like, oh, I just like, I experienced something cool, like and special and very of the moment. Like this is like, it's like the 1990s and I'm a part of it.
It's like, it's hard to say like at the time, because like, yeah, it is really at the time. I don't like to lean on that, but like consumer like 3D renderings, like this was still like impressive like stuff to just really be able to explore it. Yeah.
And the game didn't do something with it. It wasn't trying to like, oh, we're going to do like a, you know, we're going to do a King's Quest game, but it's going to be, you know, fully pre-rendered 3D looking, you know, Bryce graphics. It was like, no, we're going to make something that's like this. You could just poke around and we're not going to punish you for it. And you can just like, whatever you want to do, like have at it. It's like, you don't feel like you, the game isn't like, because you can't lose or die. It's not like it's pushing you out and saying like, oh, you're done with this now. Yeah, it's like saying like, hey, keep trying, like do what you want to do, like just figure it out. It's like a Rubik's Cube or something like that, where it's like, yeah, you may never get it, but at least you feel like there's something soothing about dealing with it. And it was inviting people into this like kind of new, you know, brave new world of CD-ROMs and stuff.
What was really cool was obviously like big deal. And forth. Like the CDs, like either you owned a CD drive and, you know, that then they were like, what do I use a CD drive for? Like, I own the CD drive because I've been told to get a CD drive. What do I do with it? And it's like,
and the other kind of lesser, yeah, the other kind of lesser appreciated thing about the game is this like auxiliary effect was it kind of propelled you onto the internet looking for answers, you know? like it was like about the same time as like you got a Myst CD and you got an AOL diskette or something like that. It's like, I'm going to figure this out. Like log on with my, you know, 28, you know, K modem. And like, I'm going to figure this out
on an internet message board. And
yeah, you just, it all was like, it was serendipity. It was all the perfect timing. Yeah,
it's all fitting together.
And the thing is like, it wasn't obvious that this is what you should do with a CD-ROM, you know, game at the time. Like, this really was the creators just like knowing, just being in the right place at the right time in a way, but also just gathering the Millers, right.
To be clear, this was not their first game. This was like their first clicking game.
No.
They made several Mac games that were similar to Myst, but obviously not 3D rendered. And so obviously, once as they were sort of getting there, they were like, we can render things in 3D, we can make a point game, we can put audio in it, and they were just like, we're doing it. And they
Were they the guy who did the Manhole?
Yes,
that was them.
Manhole, yeah. Yes, the predecessor to Myst.
Yeah, yep. Manhole is like, that's not even like, there's no puzzles, it's just a thing where you click on stuff and stuff happens.
Yeah, but you can see where they were coming from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but if you want to see, like, it's probably all up there on some archive somewhere, but you can find HyperCard games that are from like the late 80s, early 90s, and you'll see where Myst is coming from. There was a genre of weird kind of because with like, you could make Mac Venture games, right? Like Deja Vu and Uninvited and stuff, but that was very complicated. That was next level. You're kind of hacking HyperCard to make that work, but you could, if you wanted to just use HyperCard, just using the basic stuff where it's like, all it is it's like a self-contained web page that is its own app that doesn't connect outside of the app. Right. And I mean, I made my own games that way and they were a lot like Myst, like they are not nearly as good and definitely not nearly as good looking. It was like basically all using like the polygon and lasso tool and stuff to make stuff. But I made a game called, I bet I still have it somewhere on a disc somewhere, but
oof, you haven't saved it back up. Oh goodness.
I think it's gone. Yeah, it might be gone forever, but it's somewhere out there somewhere. But
I've got to mention real quick though. There was some, I can't remember the name, but I got to throw it in there. There was some highly influential HyperCard game that is just like, it's like Day in the Life of Cat. It's not called that, but it's just, you're a cat and you just click on things and it just goes through the stacks of like, you go over here, you do that, you go that. And it's just like this non-violent, no, nothing really happens. You just kind of trapeze through this like little game, and it's like, that's really like, that's where this all is coming from, is
there
kind
was
of like,
yeah, there was stuff like that, but it wasn't the same because it was all in like stark black and white, like,
yeah,
not like grayscale, like actual black and white graphics, because
that's white with dithering,
right? So with HyperCard, it was all designed, you know, around like the original Mac, which, you know, that's what it was black and white, that's what it had. So yeah, I mean, there was, you know, it was really clunky looking game, so people could do some amazing stuff with it. And this grows out of that. It's interesting because it rose to ascendance in popularity and mass cultural import at the same time that Apple and the Macintosh were just like vanishing from the face of the earth and everybody thought they were done for. Like, it's just the weirdest thing. Like, it was at the time using that platform was like, you felt like you were living on borrowed time. It's like, I better enjoy my time with my Mac now, because after this, like, there might not be another one. And lo and behold, like, it's not what happened. But at the time that this game came out, I felt like it was like the last gasp of that. Like, this is the ultimate expression of this like shareware Mac, HyperCard and Mac user group culture. And it finally got out there and it became the cultural phenomenon that was always supposed to be, but it's now too late. All right. So we're going to rank it. I think this one goes really, really high.
I said I was going to do it. I really want to do it because I want to mention the Myst structure, because this is important, because it does differentiate it from Riven. And this is why I got to talk about works so much better than Riven. Because Myst starts you on an island, and then you actually basically get pointed exactly where you need to go if you explore. Like, the whole thing is, if you explore, you will definitely find out you need to go to the library and then interact with a thing in the library. If you're in the library, you should read the books, because obviously, you're not going to read the books in the library? That would be dumb. So you read the books, and then you get to the system that gives you the hints, but the hints in this game are basically they're not hints, they're just solutions to the puzzles. But the puzzles are the puzzles that you'll get in the age where you go to if you solve that puzzle by using the answer you already have. So basically what the game does is it primes you to understand how the game works and the world that Myst operates in. Like, that's the thing that's like, I think, undersold in what Myst actually does compared to Riven, is structurally, Myst constantly does give you hints about what you need to do without directly, like, just physically writing in text, what you need to do is click this and then press that and then do that. Instead, it kind of always, you've got this idea of roughly what you should need to do without actually being directly told, except for a handful of the diary entries. But those are fine, and it's important to read in the game. I just want to get that out there. Like, once you explore the structure of Myst, it works really well, except for the Celetic Maze, which nobody gets, and it's really frustrating, which is that maze in the Sound, Celetic Age, the Rocket Ship Age. Watch out for that. We didn't mention any of the puzzles, but it deserves to be mentioned that puzzle is hell, but it's really clever.
Yeah, I think they might have even done the structure here accidentally, because clearly they want to do more with Riven. And
yeah,
Riven,
that's the thing. Like, they just expanded all the way for Riven.
And
like,
I think
Riven is horrible. Yeah,
I think the reason why they kept things smaller was just probably limitation in their like resources or time or space. And so they had to keep it small, but it did profit from that.
Yeah, like, I think because it was a hyper stack, I think they did Myst Island, and then each age was just a separate, you know, like stack. Like, there was no way to really make them sort of connect together easily. So they were like, it's fine, we'll just make them all individually, and then you collect the pages, and that's the only thing that connects the ages, really. And can I just say, the final thing with the Myst is, it was so easy for your mom, your dad, and, like, people who were not, there was no previous buy-in for games, because the interface of Myst is so, like, minimalistic, like, superb. You don't do anything. You click where you want to go, and you click on objects, and that interacts with them. And there's nothing else. Like, Myst isn't hiding any other things. It doesn't say, use the keyboard to do things. It doesn't make you mix inventory items together. The only inventory you have is books and a couple of, like, keys very occasionally for a very short period of time.
For the most part, you don't even need to... You don't even need to really read stuff.
No,
and you could also play Myst in a foreign language, and you would still get a lot out of the game. Whereas a lot of other adventure games, even if it's not a text adventure, if you play Maniac Mansion without being able to read it or read in whatever language you're playing it, you're lost. Yeah.
I mean, that, like, the downside is like, you can't say, like, there's no dialogue or any like jokes or anything you remember from Myst. It's like, hey, remember the crazy 3D rendered rocket ship? Yeah, I do. That's Myst, baby. That's what it is.
I will say, I did actually think one thing. There's two things from Myst, and they're both kind of connected. The books are extremely Myst. Nobody else gets the linking books, those are like their iconic mist. And connected to that, that radio tuning sound with the static noise.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That is iconic mist, like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
I really like that sound. Okay. It's a cool ass sound.
All right, so
yeah, mist. Yeah,
we got to rank it. We got to rank the mist.
We have a choice.
Yep, we have to.
Okay, so
mist is a prequel to Riven.
No. It's just mist.
I think it's actually mist, the successor to Manhole.
No, it's not. It's just mist.
Mist, nope. The inspiration behind Abduction.
Yeah, so one last thing. If you want to play this Mist today, you can, because it was ported to about every platform ever. But I would recommend to not play it maybe on the 3DS or the CDI. There are some fairly not so great ports, let's put it that way.
Most people like the most recent Real Mist like Masterpiece version, which has it's actually built in Unity, weirdly enough, but
it's not bad.
It has wandering around mode, and it also has fixed angle mode. I love fixed angle mode. I just don't look. Okay, so I don't love the wandering. It's fine, but the reason I don't like the wandering is most of the vistas in Mist are kind of perfectly framed. Like they're right. Very clearly chosen camera angles. So if you wander around, you don't hit that like gorgeous vaporwave album after vaporwave album look. It's more you just kind of wandering around and
the wandering around stuff, like the Real Mist, like, you know, 3D space movement stuff is for people who already know the game.
Yeah, I think
so. It's just another way of playing the game once you've already know what you're doing. But yeah, you should play it the way it was meant to be played. I just think, you know, Real Mist is easier to get working and
it's definitely the easiest. It's the one I want you to play.
All right, come on.
Also, it has weather.
Look, yes. Okay, we got to rank it.
You got to go. All right.
Do it.
All right. So, I mean, do we start really high or do we just look at something around the...
I mean, I'm looking somewhere in the top 100 at this moment.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think you could justify any, like, I mean, I'll just say, like, at 99, we got Her Story. He's got to go above Her Story. Like,
it does.
There's no question, so we've already got to move it along.
I think minimum you could put it around Kentucky Route Zero, Echo the Dolphin area, but I think that its importance as, like, a cultural touchstone puts it way higher.
So I think, like, as I said, like, Mist kept selling. This game sold insanely well from 1993 until like 2000. It just kept like, it's hard to like to understand that this game was just available to buy for 7 years. Like, not necessarily at your PC shop. It shifted from, you know, the GameStops of the world to the Walmart sort of like, hey, we got a copy of Mist, it's $10. And you're like,
yeah, it came within like 6 or 7 years of like the smartphone era. It almost made it to, it was so close to lasting until it could have just been like, hey, it's missed on the,
it's back again.
It just transcends time. So
sequels did not, like very few games, more recently, I think some games have sort of landed with that kind of, that peaceful movement, exploration, mucking around, but so many games immediately after it either went super puzzle heavy, they introduced a bunch of NPCs, or they're too linear, or they're too punishing, like, Mist just is like, it's a thing and it works really well and it perfect balance, you know, by accident or intention. And it just,
yeah, there's never going to be another Mist. Like, there'll be another game that serves the same purpose as Mist, but it's just not going to happen.
I think there could have been, but I think the gimmicks that you would have used for that would have been like motion controls or virtual reality, but that ship has sailed. So,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
I mean, a VR game would probably be the next like thing.
Yeah, but VR has been around for a while now, so you're not going to truly impress anyone with VR.
Yeah, that's true. But you could look at Mist the same way, where it's like you know, like Hyperstat games have been around for a while now, but now you got CD-ROMs. Like, if you've got some kind of way,
Someone may somehow make a virtual reality game that just everyone is like, all right, we got to buy this. Like, we just have to buy into virtual.
I mean, we all know it won't happen, but I say that because I definitely, you know, I'll be proven wrong.
I just want to like make sure you've got
a few years and make sure it's on the record so I can look like an idiot. Yeah.
Computers. Nobody will need a computer. Let's just bump it up a notch just to let's.
I want to put it. Okay. So I'm thinking like the more I think about it, the more I want to put it like up, like around like Toe Jam Earl, Toe Jam and Earl, Bloodborne, Bionic Commando. It's got to go above Crash Team Racing, which is number 26 for some inexplicable, ungodly reason.
It's the best game ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like,
I think that would be fair. Yeah.
I had asked, and like people had sort of said like they didn't really see it above Doom. That's number 7. I'm trying to find like a hard upper limit.
I wouldn't put it above Doom.
I think like we don't have Another World on here, do we?
Not yet.
I feel like wherever that would go would have to be the upper limit, because that's just it's a similar thing, but it's just so much more. I hate this adjective, but it's true. Like it's a more powerful game.
I mean, Mrs. Power is sort of that it tapped into, I don't know how to say it other than the casual market.
It captured the imagination of like
it was not like PC, it didn't have to era. Be someone who wanted to play video games to be like, whoa, this is something that I'm interested in. Like you could, it's that like, I don't play video games, but I finished Myst, or I played Myst, you know?
Yeah,
it's
because
that kind of
Myst
like
is
weird.
I think video games are often called like experiences and stuff, but I think for Myst that really does fit. It is, it was like a mystical experience at the time.
How about this? Like, let's put it right below Final Fantasy VI, right above Crash Team Racing, because I feel like that's the demarcation point where you start passing from like, this is a really great video game, to passing into the territory of this is like a, I don't want to say transcendent, but like a very special emotional experience with a lot of these games. Not all of them. Grant, like Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, not like a super emotional experience. It's just like a really freaking good, like, you know, fighting game. But you know, for the most part, like a lot of these,
yeah,
you know,
like,
same thing
definitely
with Rocket Knight and all that, but like, yeah, like Super Metroid, you know, Devil May Cry, Silent Hill 2, Earthbound, you know,
yeah. I mean, like, these are all excellent. Like, this is a very tough for us to
those are games that, but the thing is, the other question we've got to ask is, I don't know whether I would say Myst holds up today. I just think that it's holding up is almost irrelevant, because I feel like people who want to understand the history of games need to play it.
Actually,
I would
actually say it does. There's plenty of genres from the time, from 1993, where a lot of games have become unplayable, and the ones we still play, like let's say Wolfenstein 3D, those are the top examples. But Myst holds up. You can still play Myst today, even the original. It might be a little bit low res, but you're not going to like throw your keyboard out of the window because you need.
It's true. The gameplay hasn't necessarily aged. It's just more like, it didn't get better, and therefore we look at it as being old fashioned. But in another way of looking at it, it's kind of like the pinnacle of its thing.
Yeah, it might not be as impressive if you play it today for the first time, but you can still do that. Yeah.
Does either one of you agree with me at below Final Fantasy VI above Crash Team Racing?
I definitely agree in the sense that it needs to be at least that high. Like I don't think any lower fits Myst.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can either of you make a case for making it any higher than that?
The only case I could make is that you could argue that a game like Sonic 3 and Knuckles wasn't quite as new as Myst was. I don't say it has to go there. That's my case, that some of the games above it aren't quite the like novel thing that Myst used to be at the time.
I will say Myst did kind of step in as, and we have been very clear about this, it took an entire medium forward. Like, it did. It came up and said, CD, there you go. This is it. And that is pretty, like, substantial, you know? Like, most... It doesn't push an engine or anything. It doesn't, like... It's not, like, a technical achievement in a programming sense, really. It is just, like, this is, like, a step forward in... Like, we like to say multimedia games sometimes, but it is more, like, you know, making games be more, like, spaces, and you know, with the sound and the visuals, and it doesn't need anything else to be a space. Like, it's not telling a particularly interesting story in a particularly, you know, emotive way. It's just like, holy hell, this is like as real as real life, which of course is absolutely preposterous
right
to say now, but
yeah, but okay, so where would that put it?
I mean, like, that's why I'm struggling here, 'cause I'm like, ooh, every game here is also like as good, right?
It's so. The problem is I can't say I would recommend Myst to anybody unless they're like a budding historian, because I do feel like there's other kind of puzzle adventure games that are just as good. And I do feel like the classic point and click adventure games hold up a lot better because they're more entertaining, and the wow factor thing for Myst doesn't exist anymore. And it can never exist again.
To justify putting Myst this high, like we'll just say like below Final Fantasy VI for the sake of it, is that Myst, on the other hand, assumes virtually no knowledge of anything.
True.
That's one of my favorite aspects of Myst. In fact, the hardest puzzle for me as a child to physically understand was the lighting a match and putting it in a gas oven. Because I didn't understand how ovens worked as a kid. Like, I don't know how to light a gas oven. And so I was like, what am I doing? I don't understand. How do I do this puzzle?
So then we're agreed then. It goes at number 26.
I don't feel like I can make
super
it compelling enough.
Crazy, up. Insanely high. That's a very good spot.
Yes, it
right
is.
Below it Final is. Fantasy VI, right above Crash Team Racing. are we okay with that?
I have
it fills
pain
me with glee to hear you read Crash Team Racing at that height. No, I mean, Myst, I think you're kind of unrecommending it, but I would say if you haven't played Myst, you have missed out on a fundamental step.
Ooh, you did it. You did it.
I mean, okay, good point. Like,
you guys all booed in there. Somebody is being silly with the list. Please check it out at number 26 if you see our list online, and you will find the humor.
Just give it a chance, okay? Like, give it a chance. It might be your thing. And just, if nothing else, you can get a sense of what it was like back in those days, which aren't that long ago, but in another more accurate sense, are like a long million years ago.
I feel a trillion years old at this point.
Yeah, it's
please
just
send help.
And it's a very special and culturally significant game that should not be missed or will be pissed. Check out Myst and recording. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.